Welcome to the Average Joe Movie Show. I'm Matt Wallace. This is Andrew Brown. And hey. This episode is sponsored by Shane Scantling because I forgot about him.
It's okay.
No, this episode is specifically sponsored by Ragged Cadaver. Stick around and we'll show you some good stuff about horror enamel pins. He'll tell you the most. So, intro's out of the way. That was easy. Should we just end it? That was a good show.
Damn, we did it, guys.
Yeah, we fucking did it, boys.
Back to the fried chicken and beer.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, the sponsors. You know. So we're going to talk about The Northman. We're also going to talk about The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which I saw, and hopefully everybody else sees too, because it's amazing. Preview to what's coming up. And yeah, it's going to be pretty easy. We're just kind of getting ready for our next week's show, which is a Sam Raimi episode. And we're ready to roll with it. So, Drew, you were obviously most excited about this movie. You know, you're a Robert Eggers fan. You're a big fan of The Lighthouse, The Witch. And your expectations were high. And so tell us how you thought of The Northman this weekend.
Yeah, it was such an unlikely scenario. I didn't think I was going to walk out of the movie underwhelmed. That's not the right word, because it's such a spanning epic. It's so masterfully done. It's so Robert Eggers. It's so beautiful. All the visuals, everything was painstakingly done, but it just didn't live up to my expectations, and I think I would rank it probably third. He's only ever made three movies, The Witch, Lighthouse, and The Northman. I think it's my least favorite of his.
No. Well, you say least favorite, so that it's not like you hated the movie.
No,
so.
Absolutely not. It was one of the best movies of the year. I don't think it was my favorite movie of the year. I'd probably have to see a list to figure out what that is exactly, but I think my favorite movie of the year is probably still The Batman.
The Batman?
You
know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over The Northman. So,
all right.
A lot of people are probably going to disagree with me. I mean, there are people out there that are just absolutely raving about this movie, but it just didn't live up to expectations for me.
What were your expectations? Like, I know, like, in the sense of, we're not going to give too many spoilers away, but if you've seen Hamlet and The Lion King, you know it's going to fucking happen.
Right.
So, but we won't give away the ending, obviously, but we'll talk a little bit about what happens. And
so Robert Eggers' style, I described it like a fever dream in this movie, and that's the way it kind of is. It's very, very abstract, visceral, just strange, you know. A couple of us had compared this film to Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain, if anybody's seen that, as far as visuals go and stuff. And that's how they tie in a lot of the Nordic lore and mythology and stuff in this film. So it's not just a straightforward battlefield revenge epic. You know, it does become like a little surreal and, you know, kind of hallucinogenic at times and stuff like that. But I feel like either he could have went further with that aspect or dialed it back. I don't know. Like, I would have liked to see him go further with that kind of stuff.
Do you think
it become more surreal, more strange. Like,
do you think that he was kind of handcuffed to make a sort of blend?
You know, not really, because I swear it's like, I think they're giving Robert Eggers like a lot of creative freedom.
By the looks of it.
Yeah, I got to say, at this point, he's established himself enough that, like, that's one exciting thing about his films, is that I feel like they're really going to give Robert Eggers creative freedom. And that was non-existent in the past with Hollywood studios, you know. But it was like, he made The Witch, and I loved it, and it got mixed reviews. Elevated horror, they called it. And then The Lighthouse was like, okay, here's my style times 1,000. You know, it just got so much more atmospheric and strange. And then with this one, he scaled it back, you know, and it's kind of the most approachable film that Robert Eggers has made so far.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not what I was looking for necessarily.
I mean, I can totally understand that, you know, like you have that expectation of what he makes rather than the content that was kind of presented. Is that kind of a good interpretation?
Yeah.
So
I know they were trying to go for historical accuracy. So people are praising it for that.
Yeah.
So I'm a little ignorant. I don't know that much about Nordic, you know, classic history, mythology. I don't know that much about that kind of stuff. So some people that are into that sort of thing are probably absolutely in love with it. But, aside from that, like, it just fell kind of flat for me. like I was saying, like certain things, certain moments throughout the film, the way you should feel at somebody's demise or, you know, certain experiences with certain characters, I didn't feel that attached to it.
Yeah, you know? It made conflicting. It's like you said, where it felt like you weren't really attached to a character.
And I didn't think I was.
I wasn't attached to the protagonist all that much.
Right. Yeah, it's not like you're watching the Mel Gibson and the Patriot and like
or in Braveheart.
All you want. Your blood is boiled. Like, literally, I hate a fictitious character in that film more than I've ever hated anybody in my real life. And I wanted to see him get revenge as much as he wanted to get revenge. Yep. This doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. And
almost at points, it feels like he's the fucking asshole in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you it's. It's just somebody you didn't really, like, you didn't give a shit who won. Like, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think it ended the way it should have.
Yeah.
So, you know, no spoilers, of course, of what happens. But there's some things go along the way, you know, some, even, you know, when, I'm trying to think, I should probably start to kind of tell you the story. So, Alexander Skarsgård plays, what's Hamill? Hummel?
I don't remember his name, but he's a prince. He's a young boy and he's a prince.
He's a prince to this little kingdom where Ethan Hawke plays the king, and he makes this blood oath to say, if anything happens to me,
Omleth. Yeah.
So
via Willem Dafoe, who's his character
fucking
was
crazy. They made a awesome blood oath of like, you will avenge me.
He's the fool. He's the jester, but he also is like clearly like in touch with the dark arts and like something very surreal and supernatural when they make this blood oath. Unfortunately, he wasn't in the film very long.
No.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah. And afterwards, you know, of course, in the trailers, if you've seen it, like, you know, the king dies by the brother's hand, and on starts the Lion King and Pride Rock.
It ends with Lord of the Rings. We're destroying the ring in the fires of Mount Doom.
Yeah,
but not nearly as epic feeling. It just literally just
then Voldemort comes out of nowhere. Holy, it was crazy, Robert.
Oh, yeah, dude, Voldemort. I thought we were doing no spoilers.
Voldemort comes out.
This is actually the newest installment of the Harry Potter franchise.
But instead of, you know, Scar falling from Pride Rock, it's Hans Gruber falling from Nakatomi Tower. So, also got eaten by hyenas at the end of Die Hard. If you know, spoilers for that one.
But continuing on, Ethan Hawke is the father. They make the blood pact that he has to defend his father's honor if and when he dies. And the father, very early in the film, vows to die in battle, no matter what, by the sword.
Yeah, and then he gets killed by his brother. Onstart.
Fjolnir.
Yeah,
I was gonna say I'm not even gonna try to do the Nordic names right now. Like, you can keep stammering if you want, but I'm not naming any names because I don't know how to pronounce
his name. Is OnStar for the rest of the film.
OnStar.
Anybody who really loves that movie is gonna fucking hate me.
Fjolnir.
So the brother kills the king. He takes over the kingdom. Takes it as a cost. You know, at that point. So now the main character is fueled by vengeance. Well,
goes into hiding for a while. They think he's dead.
Yeah, you know, they wanted to kill him both.
He still exists.
The bloodline.
The one guy claims that he killed him, that he saw his body float off into the ocean after he slices off his nose. And there's some gore. There's some gore in the film for sure. He comes back and poses as a slave in their encampment, and they choose him because he's like a massive fucking bear if you've seen him in the trailers, and he's just they think he's a worthy candidate to be a part of their encampment. Little do they know he's planning on exacting vengeance, you know,
fucking them up.
Yeah.
And he does a good job at, you know, torturing the entire town.
Yeah.
So there's some crazy violence and
it gets pretty dark
imagery.
Dude.
Yeah.
What
he
does with like some of the bodies and like that, like with the crows and like, you remember that crazy like formation that made me think of The Witch.
Yeah.
It was like that was the closest thing to horror within the film, and I just felt like he was. That was a personal choice. Like that was an homage to some really dark body horror.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, there's parts too, like it felt more horror than like action epic. too. Yeah. Like, especially when he was going down to take the to drink the stuff with Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt like some, like, it felt creepy. It felt, like, nerve-wracking a little bit.
So maybe it's a personal thing, but I wanted more of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of ritualistic aspects to it that made it horror.
Yeah,
I think
York plays what? Like, he calls her, like, witch. Is she a witch?
I think she's like some sort
blind
of
blind visionary.
Yeah, like, she was crazy. Even the little that, you know, that she was in it.
Yeah,
so
I liked her.
Yeah, she was
cool. She was awesome. Yeah.
And Anya Taylor-Joy, you know, playing her role in it. She was great. She's always a great actress. She played status quo.
I don't think they quite let her get her chops out.
That's what I felt.
You know, yeah.
She had limited scenes, and she was kind of a side character.
I felt like that with a lot of people, but it's like maybe like the mindset of people at the time, the way people were in like in those ancient Nordic times, like maybe there were men of few words. They were people of few words. They were just they lived a simpler sort of it's not going to be like a Tarantino Coen Brothers film where it's just all laden with dialogue, you know. It's not going to be that kind of, and maybe that's what was lacking for me, that like affected the pacing and affected the development of certain characters and made me not care so much about the climax, you know.
A lot of you know, that brings up a good point of like, you know, atmospheric directors like John Carpenter or even Wes Craven, you know, a lot of horror directors who are great with atmosphere, and Robert Eggers is no different. That, you know, you kind of rely on the atmosphere to push almost the narrative, not the narrative, but push the movie to where you don't give a shit about the pacing. You never seen Green Knight? Did you end up watching that?
I was going to completely compare this movie to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just it was a very much a driving force to kind of take away from the pacing of the film.
Yeah.
And I don't think it stuck, you know, because sometimes you're just like, what is going on here? You know, like I kind of, you know, if you don't attach yourself to a character, like, it's like, I don't know. When I stick to pacing and I think of poorly paced films, think of the movie Spun. I hate that movie.
I love that movie.
I hate it so much.
Me and Allie just watched it a few weeks ago.
There's just nothing going on, and I'm just like, I can't attach to any of you.
It's because it's the life of a bunch of fucking meth heads.
I know.
Nothing is going on.
I mean, granted, but it was not. There was, for me, there was like not a driving story. That's the same thing for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I was like, I can't attach myself.
I agree with you on that. I guess a lot of drug hallucinogen type movies are like that. Because there really is a lack of plot.
Yeah.
If you just break it down, it's like, what's the plot of this movie? It's like, oh, that isn't a plot.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But then again, you know, I something that's done well that's not really a plot was Clerks. You know, I attached to the characters.
Yeah.
You know, through
just a day in the life.
Day in the life of a clerkman.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. And I did, with the reason I make that comparison is it's like, okay, I attach to one character and then I really want him to succeed, and then all of a sudden I don't, and then I feel lost in the middle of the movie, and I'm just like, you know what, now I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So but I again, that only if it only goes true for how well your story is, and I'm sure, you know, the Shakespearean stories I don't attach to all that well. I mean, I know that that was another driving force for the plot.
I don't know much about Hamlet. I just know that this is derived from that story.
Yeah.
I'm not a Shakespearean expert myself either.
And maybe there was a lot more than I know. I don't know much, and, you know, I can't say. But any Hamlet-type movie that I've watched has always been lackluster for me. You know, maybe it was just a driven thing. But, you know, outside of those complaints, I thought I had a great time, you know, with the movie. I can't just say that, you know, I didn't want to just shit on it for the next, like, 45 minutes. I loved the violence. I did love Alexander Skarsgård. The acting was on point. You know, the imagery was top-notch, even though the ending I would have changed. But
looked
a little wonky.
CGI?
Yeah, a little wonky.
A little just too... Yeah,
it
too green,
like,
screened.
Yeah, it feels like Robert Eggers, like, he doesn't know how to utilize that budget that well yet.
I was thinking that in a couple different circumstances. We were talking about, like, choreography and stuff.
Yep.
And sometimes the choreography, you should never notice the choreography in a battle sequence, in a fight sequence. You shouldn't be like, oh, that motion looked non-diegetic. That doesn't look like a real-life motion, or he moved too slow for that. explosive reaction. And
that didn't connect.
Couple times, my naked eye caught it, and I was like, oh, maybe Robert Eggers isn't ready for certain aspects like that. He's never made a very action-packed film.
Yeah, and for me, that's a big problem because I love war movies and I love war choreography. Yeah. And if I'm not seeing the impact of things hitting people, it just doesn't feel like it sticks to me a little bit. It's not good for
that's me. Not even something I would normally look for. Yeah. So I don't go into a movie and that's not like my repertoire. So for me to have like noticed that a couple times, like that, I mean, that means it really stands out. You know?
Yeah. That's. I'm trying to think because I'm an action junkie. I didn't really. Was it when he was Berserker? One of the Berserker moments, like when they were doing that invasion of that.
Yeah, when they're going in the city, there was one moment where he hit somebody with an axe, and it looked like they just kind of didn't react correctly. And
yeah.
One of the horse where he knocked them off the horse.
Yeah.
Didn't look right.
I remember that, the horse part.
Yeah, it's just like if something doesn't look natural, it probably isn't, you know, kind of thing. Maybe it was just. Is weird because, you know, from what I understand, Robert Eggers is very much
very
like
particular,
very, very particular. Like he'll go like 8-9 takes on something super like just like walking around. I'm like, why don't we have this?
I mean, some of those shots were probably really hard to achieve. You know, I heard that they were filming in freezing cold temperatures and terrible, terrible weather like trying to coordinate such big, wide, epic, sweeping scenes, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if like that was part of it, you know. But I heard that I don't know if that's like one of his marketing ploys or whatever. But Robert Eggers is always like, "Yeah, it was such a grueling filming experience. It always is." It's like, well, why put your people through that? Like, find a way next time on movie four to not absolutely make everybody miserable and have them have PTSD from filming the movie. You know,
you want to get the best out of them. Yeah. You know, I will say, you know, it's. Like Alexander Skarsgård from, you know, like the beginning when he went berserker and he was like screaming. Yeah. Like, I was just like, I'm like, oh my fucking God.
That scene, the whole raid of the village was awesome.
I had no problem with any of the acting in this movie.
No.
I don't think any of the acting was an issue.
You know, what's weird is like, I haven't seen Tarzan. I didn't see, there's another movie that he was in that I didn't know about, but he was last movie I saw him in was Godzilla vs. Kong, and he didn't do a very good job.
Source material.
The world needs him. Needs Kong. I'm like,
he said. I read something saying that this is like his dream role. Yeah. That he was like, as a joke, obviously he's not going to, but he was like, I can now comfortably retire after playing a Viking prince. Like he was all about the role, and you can tell. That he immersed himself in it, that he really like gave it his all. He put everything into this role.
I did feel
very much a non-speaking role. Like he doesn't speak all that much.
There's not a lot
the
of talking
movie, you know?
In
yeah.
general.
Yeah.
Like it's again, it's the visions and almost the hallucinogen type parts that kind of drive it and kind of keep you in thrall. Like it just a lot of eye candy.
Yeah. Horses flying toward Valhalla in the sky in some nebula-filled sky.
That looked awesome.
Black and white sequences and I mean, it's a visual spectacle for sure.
Yeah.
Not as much as The Lighthouse, but still very much so. That's Robert Eggers' style. I'm glad he still maintained that, you know.
Yeah, he kept his style. Like, you can put that up against anything and you'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Yeah. So, but overall, you know, Shane, what would you – it didn't really get – we kind of.
I mean, my opinion is the same as it was when we left. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great.
Not a masterpiece.
Would it even be, as of right now, in your top 10?
Top 10 of what?
Of movies of the year?
I mean, I've only seen like 4 movies this year.
Yeah.
So. I don't think.
I've seen 27.
So. I think it'll end in the top 10.
I think so too.
I don't think it's going to be top 5.
If I'll watch it again. I think it also demands a second viewing to kind of for, not necessarily for a plot or anything, but definitely for anything I've missed. Maybe it's one of those instances where I'd be like, maybe I'll like it more or less. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like
a couple
days after, I feel pretty good about it. You know, it's pretty much middle of the road. You know, I didn't love it, didn't like, didn't hate it. So it's, you know,
I feel like this movie was kind of set up like as a war epic.
That was a big thing. Yeah, you wanted a brave heart, patriot type, you know, and you're just like, And that was exciting. That was an exciting thing. Like
it never pulled on my heartstrings. Yeah. Like, I didn't care if somebody died. I didn't care. Like, yeah, I did. I mean, to an extent. But, like, not, you know, like, when something, when it's really well done under those circumstances, it feels like it becomes part of your personal agenda almost. You're like, I need this. Like, I can't walk out of this movie.
We gotta get this
unless
guy.
This happens. Like, I'll be fucking pissed. Like, I was like, oh, whatever happens, happens. Like, I didn't feel that attached.
I would have been perfectly fine. I mean, he had the choice at the end. I would have been perfectly fine if he chose the other option.
Yeah.
Decided.
There's a choice that he makes, you know, to continue on or do something else.
Yep.
And, you know, once you see the movie, you'll find out what that is. But it's, you know, I didn't care.
Right.
I didn't give a shit.
Anything, I wanted him to make the other choice. I was
We were along for the ride, but not invested. It's such a simple, good way to put it. Like, the film doesn't make you feel invested, but you're still stoked to be along for the ride.
It's 100%. Definitely still be top 10 right now for me. You know, and I feel like it being in the bottom half of my top 10, knowing what movies are coming out now.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, again, expectations versus what happens. It's maybe once we go into, like, knowing what we're getting into, maybe it'll change for the better or for the worse. I'm not sure. So, but, you know, moving on, I did see, this was Thursday night, I saw The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And that movie, and I'm going to make a segment of it during the Average Joe Movie Show. It was so wholesome. Pedro Pascal, I've never seen him actually in a movie. I know he's the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And I've never seen the Mandalorian. And I know he plays a couple different other roles that are, and he's got some acting chops, man.
Man,
like, he's so good.
He's on like an Adam Driver type tier.
He's really good. And I didn't like, obviously this is not like this is not on spotlight, you know, for his acting chops, but just the direction of the film. So Pedro Pascal plays a very rich, they classify him as an olive, you know, he's in the olive business, if I'm not mistaken. And, he wants struggling Nick Cage to come be with him for a day.
Literally, you know, Nick Cage. For ignorant. He's playing himself in the movie.
Yeah, Nick Cage has been struggling not only with acting but being a part of his family. You know, he's going to therapy, talking to his kid. You know, and there's a running joke about the cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is funny. But he gets a phone call from his agent, played by Neil Patrick Harris? Yes? Yeah. So Neil Patrick Harris saying, there's this guy who'll pay you $1 million if you just hang out with him. You know, have a thing. And so he accepts once, you know, a job fell through. And he's just, you're just on for this, like, buddy feel-good movie that turns into a typical Nick Cage movie in the end, and you're just like, it was fantastic. I was completely invested. You know, I didn't think I would be. I thought I would just be trolled by Nick Cage, you know.
Yeah.
Because the last meta movie I saw was, you know, The Matrix 4. So I was just like, fuck that fucking movie. Fuck those meta movies. I was not into, like, meta movies. But this one, trailer looked fantastic. And I was just like, and the premise was just like, the way you could just make fun of yourself, knowing that you're part of this sort of cult and you embrace it completely and, you know, almost, you know, forge it.
Yeah,
and
it's funny you call it a cult. It is kind of what it's like. Like, the following of Nicolas Cage nowadays is almost cult-like.
You know?
And it's based around the fact that he's never necessarily been considered a great actor. You know, I mean, by some he is. He's literally won the Academy Award for Leaving Las Vegas. But, like, he's very outlandish and not classically speaking a great actor. And he picks very outlandish roles as well. You know.
Yeah.
So in this movie, he just, like, would you say he's got a good sense of humor? Like, he's,
oh, yeah.
Like, the whole thing was him just kind of making fun of the tropes, not necessarily the positives, the negatives too, surrounding himself and his acting career. Like, that's, I'm hoping
there's a point where he's actually talking to his his 90s, or I think it was 80s self, as Trash Cage. I forget the name of that specific character. You know, in the preview when it starts talking about fucking Nick Cage, like his fucking hair is all crazy. That's a separate entity that he talks to during the fucking movie. Like, wow, and awesome. It's like, it's just almost like a split personality between how he was. He was like, you're Nick fucking guys, woo!
I'm seeing that shit tonight,
dude. It's,
you just sold me on it.
Like, he talks to his former self that you know, kind of follows him around, and you know, they talk about a lot of his movies. Pedro Pascal is obviously a super fan. He has a whole museum of Nick Cage stuff. He had a fucking wax made of him from Face Off, and. What else?
They have $20,000 for it. Dude,
Mandy's reference a couple times.
Really?
And he's like, a fucking masterpiece. Like, goddamn right it is.
is it like chock full of that? Is like the whole movie? There's like, you can expect a reference every 5 minutes. Is it like
No.
So it's just here and there.
No, you know, you won't.
Nick Cage movie references.
And it's him as he really throws in his cinema IQ. Like, he is one of the smartest guys when it comes to film. Like, and he wants to, and that's one of the problems that he has. He can't separate his cinema self from the real, you know, father figure or husband figure. You know, like that struggle is obviously palpable between him and his daughter. You know, because he forces people to watch these movies, or his family to watch these movies, and kind of talk through them. He's like, I don't want to talk about Cabinet of Caligari for fucking 2 hours. You know, like, that's a big thing. That's why they're in therapy, you know, because it's kind of forcing, you know, he's trying to mold himself into the child, and she's rejecting it. And that's a big problem with somebody as narcissistic, you know, that it portrays as a Nick Cage character.
Okay.
So it was, you know, diving deep into that, you know, but outside of that, just what drives this film is Pedro Pascal and Nick Cage.
Okay.
Like, every time they're on scene together, they're both amazing. There's a point where they're driving.
Buddy comedy,
comedy with a little bit of action.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the regular. It turns into a Nick Cage film at the end of the movie. You're like,
that's awesome.
That's what I thought this was going to turn into. You know, this crazy, stupid action movie.
I love that.
It's exactly all the tropes of the 90s Nick Cage action movies. It was just fantastic. And then at the end, you know, I'm not gonna give away exactly what happens, but it's really just two lines. I'm actually getting goosebumps just thinking about it, because I particularly love the moment, because I can relate to it so much. And if anybody follows my Facebook, they can understand why, because I watched two movies that night. And there's a point where he's asking his three favorite movies of all time. One's Face Off, the Cabinet, Dr. Caligari, and a third movie. And that's the third movie that gets mentioned in the end of the movie. And it's just so good. Okay. It turns into a sentiment. Almost, I was on the verge of tears. I didn't actually cry, but I was like, it was a sentiment, and I was just like, wow, that really drove it home. It made a, you know, I always like those movies that, like, I'm like, oh man, that was awesome, and then a little sentimental feel at the end, and then it just ends. Yeah. It was really good. I can't wait to see it again. Like, there was parts I was just laughing out loud, and it wasn't like I was in, you know, tears, but I was just like, just audible chuckles. Like, it was, you're not gonna leave this movie thinking it's like a super bad or what have you kind of funny. Yeah. It's gonna be like, that's good. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you would expect from this movie. And then there's, you know, there's the belly busting laughing, but it's, yeah, it's so good. Yeah, and like I said, Pedro Pascal and Nick Cage together on screen was a perfect fit. And I loved it more than The Northman. Sorry, guys. I thought it was not necessarily I know they're two completely different movies, but I felt more satisfied leaving that movie than The Northman. Yeah. So
let me ask you this. Do you guys think that expectations kind of set us up
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's 100% what happened. The trailer was deceiving in The Northman, and they made it think that we were on this epic adventure of vengeance and blood and violence was
like Apocalypto or like, you know, just something that like something just big and wide sweeping and just so epic.
Yeah.
You know,
I was totally expecting that. And then in the Cage movie, I was expecting exactly what I got. You know, like it's exactly what you look like. You're like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm here for. I was like, that's why, if you go back to a couple episodes ago, the trailers are fucking atrocious sometimes when it comes to this. Like, you know, if you want us to see your movie, don't trick us.
Yeah.
Like, don't trick us into thinking that it was, you know, this one. But then again, that's probably on me. If I probably look back to the trailer, like, maybe
Universal.
I looked into this wrong. But I don't want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
I blame Universal. Because, I mean, if they would have marketed it as what it was, then I would have still watched it.
I would
have different expectations for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I went in and I hadn't even seen a trailer or I'd never heard of the movie or didn't know who was directing it, I probably would have liked it more, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Like, I think I'd still be touching on the same points. It's not like it would just be a beloved film for me. I'd be like, oh, it still fell flat here and there, whatever.
Yeah.
But, that's got to factor in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's 100%. You know, but then again, you know, I don't want to blame the director for he didn't make a terrible movie. It's just like I had expectations. And
that's natural instincts. You can't change that. Like, what can you do about that? Just turn a blind, just don't look at what's coming out. Just blindly approach films. You can't not have expectations.
Yeah.
You
know,
it goes the other way too sometimes, thankfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only been two movies that I went in like blind.
Well, he mentioned Apocalypto for me. I was completely blind to what that was.
I fucking love that movie.
I was like, holy shit, what was this movie I just watched?
I love that movie.
I didn't even see a trailer. My mom just put it on. I was like,
District 9.
That one too. Yeah.
District 9 was one.
The trailer didn't give anything away.
I didn't even watch the trailer. Yeah. I didn't watch one trailer for that. And I just went in and I was like, you know what? That looks good.
Crazy.
Like, I just saw the poster of just like, you're not alone or something like that.
I think I watched it on FX for the first time. I was just watching TV and it was on. I was like, oh, what's this?
You guys remember Mud? Did you see Mud? Matthew McConaughey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw it twice in theaters. I saw it in theaters blindly. Hadn't even seen a trailer for it. And I liked it so much that I went and saw it again the next day.
Nice.
And it wasn't talked about at all. Didn't get an Oscar nomination. Nothing. And it was the best movie of the year and one of the best movie of recent years around that time. And that's one of those, you know. I walked into it not knowing that that's a cinematic masterpiece. It's a great movie. You know,
I honestly have to watch it again.
Nobody talks about it still. I'm like, that's just one of the best fucking movies, man.
You know, we're cut a little bit on atmosphere. That atmospheric movie, that kind of like in the you know, in the swamplands almost, and and like kind of southern Georgia, North Florida type
Bayou,
Everglades, even, you know, and
dirty, filthy, everything's just disgusting. They're living off the river and all the boats and their houses. It's a Huckleberry Finn-esque story, but it's a coming of age story. Two young boys learning about life, you know, via a fugitive who ends up becoming a role model. It's just like. It's one of the most well-written stories I can still remember in recent years. You know?
Yeah, I think I do.
I don't know why that one comes to mind for me. I got to rewatch that.
Yeah, I would. No, we should probably do that. I'm doing this right here, live in time, right now. We should, because I always reference you movies and I try to show you the trailer. Sometimes I'm just gonna be like, watch this fucking movie. I'm not gonna tell you fucking anything.
He does that a lot. More often than not, it works out. Mandy was one of them, actually.
Was it Mandy?
One of them. Yeah, you pulled out Mandy on me. Or no, you know, I did. No,
I pulled out the trailer. I was like, oh my god, look at this trailer.
I anticipated the movie, but I wasn't like necessarily super, super looking forward to it. But one day I came over here, and you're like, we're watching Mandy, and you just threw it on.
Yeah.
No. I watched it here for the first time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And we couldn't get it to work.
You saw it in theaters, I think, right?
Yeah, it was in theaters one day.
Oh, yeah, and the movie was fucking up. But yeah, I saw it here for the first time, and you just kind of just pulled it out of nowhere and threw it on, you know, and that happens a lot.
<You know? laughs> Hey, man, I'm going to fucking gag you and make you watch this fucking movie. So, and John that's good. Wick. That's why I have a podcast, by the way. I force you to watch movies that I want you to watch. Hey, man, watch John Wick. Mm-hmm. So.
Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes. Bro. Dude, I'm all about Planet of the Apes now. I know, I always liked the original, but like I'm all about like the newer trilogy now.
And that's the guy. That's Matt Reeves, by the way.
Yeah.
So, and he's making the trilogy of the Batman, and also whatever happens with the Penguin show. And is there another show going on with the? Is
they're
there?
They're talking about multiple spinoffs. HBO
I don't know
Max
about
series.
That, man.
What do you mean?
I love the Penguin. I think there's a lot you can expand on with the Penguin, but like, I don't like the whole spinoff cinematic universe type thing.
Just on, I would,
I
would
love to be standalone.
I agree.
I wouldn't mind it being a collective rather than an expanding universe. Excuse me, got the hiccups, but with like Marvel's universe, they're expanding like almost like a disease almost, rather than keeping it contained, because, and we'll talk about it next week, you know, when we talk about the Doctor Strange movies, because you don't want to stay in your wheelhouse, because it'll get stale, you'll have fatigue from a certain, you know, comic book fatigue, which is, I think is still palpable in the comic book world and the movie world right now, because if it's not fucking Marvel, it's DC. If it's not DC, it's fucking Star Wars. Like, you know, it's just like you're tired of this shit. And then, you know, not to dive in too much of a rant, but it's just like I'm about to change subjects ever so slightly. You know, sequels are for movies and for shows. Just fucking spin it off and don't connect it. I almost don't want to even connect to the films.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna make a spinoff, make a goddamn spinoff and just that's it. Like, don't try to connect it and make this universe huge. And you know, it's hard to keep up. Like, viewers, you know, well, the pandemic's over now, ish. You know, like, people aren't staying in their houses going to watch and binge a bunch of films anymore. Like, people are going out and about, like, you know, kind of dial it back in. Like, it got a little crazy during the pandemic with TV shows. Like, and it took over the world, which is why Netflix now has lost 200,000 members. You know, like.
Well, I mean, you hate TV shows, but a lot of people love TV shows.
Well, the thing is, I hear your argument. I reject it completely. But check this out. Remember when TV shows came out on Netflix? How they came out? They came out all at once. Now look at it. Guess where they went back to? A regular scheduled 1 week an episode, and now, you know, now they're making more movies than TV shows. You know, like, if you've seen Netflix's lineup, there's like, what, 42 movies coming out? And then how many times did they push back Stranger Things relying on that?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's Stranger. And again, with how well Tiger King did and how not well season two went. You know, people are over it. Like, I'm not here to speak for everybody, our 20 members that watch the show, but I'm just saying, you know, if you're out there and you love TV shows, all the power to you. But you don't want to be convoluted. It just makes things more convoluted. Going back to my point of mixing movies and TV into the same realm. It just makes
They've
things
always been separate realms.
Always been. You know, like, stay in your lane. You know, if you're arguing. Same thing with the books. The books are different, though, because the books can, you know, they take a piece from the canon, and then, you know, but they don't branch off to go back in.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, we're going to make this story separate, even though you could have just, that's the thing about these Marvel movies. They could have all been movies, or these Marvel shows. They could all been movies. Every single one of them, maybe except WandaVision. You know, every other one could have been just fine. And it's just not that. And I'm kind of just sick of it. I'd rather watch a 2-hour movie with a lot better pacing. You know, these TV shows are just horribly paced. I'm watching Moon Knight. I fucking like it and I hate it at the same time.
I think that's a subjective opinion. Because I mean,
of course it is. I mean, I'm not basing
of TV shows, because I can just watch this and get a little bite to eat and then watch the next one and then.
That's the power of pause. That's not the power of pacing. Power of the.
But
you know,
I mean, it's spread out amongst eight. Like, if I were to watch, or 8, 10, whatever episodes, if I were to watch a movie, then I pretty much sit for the duration of that
movie. If it were a 10-hour movie, the pacing doesn't change.
Yeah.
You just have to have the mental fortitude to be able to sit down and watch a 10-hour movie if it were going to be that long. It just allows for more creative freedom. Having more time on screen, I mean, that's the natural human pacing. You're not going to be able to sit down and watch 24 hours of a movie, you know? You have to be able to pause. But if you were to look at it and view it as a whole, it still technically has the same tempo and pacing, just stretched out over a long period of time, you know? But so would you say, like, Netflix trying to do both, trying to do everything, becoming the world's superpower, do you think it's a bad idea? Or is it just too overly ambitious?
Maybe they're just
greed.
Disney Plus, I would definitely feel that way with Netflix. So much, you know, they're prolonging Stranger Things. Like, they put what, $500 million into their new season.
The problem is content. They're caught. There's other streaming services that caught them with content, and a lot of the material they had before weren't on streaming services, and other people own those IPs. So before there was a Disney Plus, Disney movies were on Netflix. The Office was on Netflix before Peacock was a thing.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of HBO specials that run Netflix.
Yeah.
So the problem is that they don't have good original content. And they're not caught up with stuff that HBO Max offers. That's way better to me.
That's awesome.
HBO Max is the shit.
But the thing I'm talking about, like, I know I'm beating this into the ground when it comes to, but the source material that you do have, that you do own, you beat it into the ground, and then we fucking can't.
Stranger Things, for me, is just.
Do you remember the last season?
I'm not super stoked on it.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I watched the last season that I do need to rewatch it.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't want to call it, like, long enough for a reboot, obviously, because it's only been just less than 3 years. But it's just like, you know, like, when you wanted a sequel, you had to wait, you know, at least a year and a half, have you, like, depending on how well it did, I guess. But it's just like, you know, they're taking their fucking time. That's another fucking thing. I can't stand. I understand that you want to have the product you have, but you also just like, and again, pandemic happened. I'm not stupid when it comes to that. It's just with all this stuff being pushed back, honestly, you can easily manage it nowadays in this day and age with Zoom calls and, you know, just say computer animation. Like, I'm sure all that shit was done filming after a while.
Yeah, it should not take as long as it's taking to you know, film some of these seasons.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, the pandemic was a big part of that. But even so, even with that set aside, it's like, you should be able to whip out a season a year.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you lose interest. Ozark's done it well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ozark is in the same arena and is worth mentioning because it's, like, considered one of the most popular Netflix series of all time, you know?
And The Boys, too. Yeah. The Boys, I would say, is a good example because every year they're coming out with a new season.
To me, with the series, though, like, what are movies and what are TV shows are just essentially an escape. We're escapists. We want out of our life and our mindset for a prolonged period of time. We want to experience something different. We want to live vicariously through somebody else without taking risks, you know. And with a show, it, like, for the addict in me is the one saying this because I'm like a binge watcher and I'm an addict.
Yeah, me too.
It just gives me more of that, you know. And that's how maybe it's greed or whatever. I just want more.
It's
you
stretched
know?
Out.
And when I go and watch a 2-hour movie or even a 3-hour movie, I get stoked when it's a 3-hour movie because it means there's more content. Like, I just want more, you know. And when it's a TV show, it just feels more fulfilling because I get that. Like, it's like, okay, I can devote 2 weeks of my life to this, you know. It's not healthy. It's not a healthy perspective, but it's one that a lot of people relate to. It's like, 2 hours isn't enough for me anymore.
I feel like
I need 2 weeks.
That's great and all. I agree with all of that. Just imagine, let's talk about Sons of Anarchy. Is there ever a stretch that you don't watch?
No, I've seen it all the way through 5 times, I think.
Like, okay, let's just...
I believe...
What about Lost?
Yes.
Okay.
I get lost.
All right.
During Lost.
All right, so think about
that's
this.
That's 25-episode season.
So in Lost, you know, it's a movie produced and created by J.J. Abrams. You know, they get lost on this island from a planet, you know, and there's these... How many people? Like, 16 people are stuck on an island. They try to survive. And there's certain things that happen that, you know, it ends on a cliffhanger. Yeah. Right? And then you won't see you,
every single episode.
Every single episode. Every single hour episode. Yeah. And you have to wait. Well, it came on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And you had to wait. Not a week.
Oh.
You never had to wait a week because the next episode, which would come a week later, has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, actually. I never had to watch it that way, thankfully.
Yeah,
I could sit there and binge watch 13 episodes if I wanted. But yeah, what would happen is one episode would be all about one character and their backstory in the real world off the island and whatever. And you'd get so invested in it.
And you'd talk about it all week long?
It wouldn't return to that for four episodes. It would do four other characters. So, let's think about
a month before you get resolution on that.
Then you forget what's happening.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't have been able to stay in touch with Lost if I had watched it on television.
Like everybody, I remember everybody was talking about it at Blackbeard's. That's what I mean by like TV shows in its regular form, not necessarily as a binge. Like I can binge watch. I binge watched Love Is Blind. Like I like shows and stupid shows too. Like a guy who's watched Love Is Blind but not The Mandalorian.
I gotta go. Have a good one, guy.
Hey man, he left the podcast forever.
Oh, this is the guy that hates TV. That's kind of.
I understand.
You just invalidated everything you've said.
I understand how TV is this in that realm. It's just there's certain things I just like.
It's just like when you're watching a movie, it's like eating a slice of cheesecake. Where a TV series is like eating pieces of that same slice of cheesecake. You're still gonna eat the whole thing. It's just gonna be divided up in smaller chunks.
Yeah.
You can put more. You can put more material into it.
I get what you're saying. I'm not even gonna be like, whatever. I have the weirdest analogies of all.
I've heard some doozies from Matt.
I can't be like, that's out there, but I would have probably said the same thing. So you ever seen a serious man from Joel and Ethan Coen?
Yeah.
It's the parking lot. That's all they mention. I'm just like, That movie's fucking crazy, by the way. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
let's get back to Netflix because it's a hot topic right now.
Netflix is,
they're going to go the way of Blockbuster, but
maybe.
You think so?
They can bounce back.
They keep raising their prices. They just did again last month.
Well, that's what happened.
I rarely $15 watch Netflix. Then. I only keep Netflix because... Oh, and they also started stating that if anybody else uses your account, they're going to start slapping fees on you. You sons of bitches!
I think it's 21 for 4K. I think it's like three tiers now. There's like a standard tier, and then there's like a upgraded tier for multiple screens or whatever. And then there's 4K, which is like 20 something bucks.
I'm wondering where they
cap off on like what Netflix charges, and they obviously have to charge more because their production budgets have gone up so astronomically.
Yeah.
Well, did we ask for that? No. Like I just want to watch like. Half the shit I watch on there is from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't ask for them to make 42 movies this year, so I don't want to be paying $60 5 years from now and have it be more than my entire internet bill.
That makes perfect sense. Because take a look at how does Amazon Prime outsource their money to have their production? Amazon, HBO, AT&T, they're making it all themselves, like.
Not to mention they have good shows from HBO, their original content.
Exactly, and Netflix did a fantastic job making what they have today.
It's a great template. It really is.
Yeah, and they're the pioneers of the streaming service. They were the first to get there, and it was amazing. And you know what? I still watch Netflix. Right now I watched so much Fairly Odd Parents this week.
Oh my god, bro. It's been on a repeat in my fucking house.
I love it.
Singing the song,
love it. Love it so much. Like if you, granted, I know you have to make new content, make it fresh, what have you, it's a saturated world now. Like, and honestly, you're kind of the term, enemy of my own creation I don't know. They created something, and now it's the big problem that they created. I don't know how to say it exactly.
Frankenstein's monster.
So you made Frankenstein's monster. at this point, and now there's like 700 Frankensteins so out there. I don't know. Let's talk about bad analogies. Listen, cheesecake and Frankensteins. One eats one. You know, which one is it?
I like to, you know, I like to think about Netflix like beer. You know, I'm going to continue to consume it. I like drinking it. It makes me drunk, but it's probably not the best idea. I don't know. That's my analogy for the day.
I'm dying. That's okay. All right. I get it. You know, it's like the parking lot, you know. It's just the sand.
What do you think they need to do to be more relevant? Lower the price again?
I mean, I'm not an exec on Netflix, and you know, they've long regarded themselves, you know, as the place to go for stand up outside of HBO. HBO was the place to go.
Prime's,
and now
got some good stuff now too.
Now Prime's up, and you know, they were knocking them out of the park with their Orange and Black. Orange is the New Black. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Mindhunters was great, and they canceled that.
Yeah, and they, you know, obviously Stranger Things really put them on the map. I think that was the big one that really put them over the top.
I like Peaky Blinders a lot. That was originally like BBC, and Netflix adopted it. But I mean,
speaking of which, they have the new season out.
It's on Netflix now?
It's not on Netflix yet. I know. It's released.
Yeah, I heard that. I was going to say, if it's on Netflix now, I'm ending the podcast now. Yeah,
I'm watching it today.
Peace. That's one of my favorite shows of all time. Yeah. And Netflix is what brought that to us Americans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I couldn't really tell you what Netflix should do, you know? Like, again, I think they just kind of have to play it out and, you know... I would stop fucking driving up your prices, because that's exactly how the competition wins, because they undercut the competition. You know, like, you're the competition. You're the one with the target on its back.
I heard,
like,
they're also cutting funding to animation.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, I know. That's free money. Like, you could just outsource stuff from Japan and just pay.
Like, imagine, costs. What they should probably do, they did have Attack on Titan at one point. They did have a couple of animes. I think if they outsourced outside of, like, get a lot more foreign films in there, and there's a lot more cult movies too. Like,
Max is doing that well.
Yeah.
With all the Studio Ghibli stuff. Like, I was just scrolling through the other day, and they got all the good, like, mm-hmm. Kiki's Delivery Service and Howl's Moving Castle, and like lot of like the cool classic anime, and like
That's the best streaming service out there right now.
I was going to say, content-wise, HBO Max is...
I'm surprised when I scroll... Even Disney Plus does pretty well, too. HBO Max, when I scroll through HBO Max, I'm like... I find myself wondering why I subscribe to any other service.
Yeah,
there's no reason to have anything else. They have everything I could ever want to watch on HBO Max. It's well-rounded.
They have Courage the Cowardly Dog.
They have Cartoon Network.
I looked through their horror selection last night. They probably have the best horror selection.
No.
Aside from, actually, you know who has a good horror selection? It's Tubi TV. Tubi?
Yeah, that's right. That's
And it's free, and you watch it with ads, and dude, they have like VHS era, every obscure, interesting, weird horror film you could ever think of from the 80s. Like, all kinds of stuff, man. They do well on horror, but I was surprised to see that HBO Max actually has a really good horror selection. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like all kinds of Criterion stuff mixed in with great 80s slasher, mixed in with modern James Wan, like, they just have a really wide variety, and that's just the one genre I went through, other than, like I said, I was looking through animated and a couple other things.
I mean, I'm not going to try to open up another can of worms, but I said it yesterday that Sony's making better animated movies than Disney.
That's a can of worms.
So we'll save that one for the new Sony movie that comes out, which will be Spider-Verse, which is actually now next year. Fuck, man.
I mean, you haven't seen Encanto, so.
Yes, I did. Bitch.
It's
okay. Yeah, it's good. It's good, but it's not. Listen, we said we weren't going to fucking open it.
Yeah, I'll let you speak your opinion, and I'll just leave it at that.
That's just, I guess that's like your opinion, man. All right. Well, we got to get going. What are we running at? 45? 54 minutes. So we gotta get to our sponsor, and that's our show, at least for now, everybody. But we got one thing to show you. We have Drew's picks at the and he's gonna He's going to tell you also about the sponsor today, which is Ragged Cadavers, because he made that shit. Take it over, Drew.
Yes. Keep it short and sweet this time on the Drew's Picks aspect of it. Nightbreed, one of my favorite films ever made, 1990. My first viewing was when I found it at a garage sale for 50 cents. And nice. It fucked me up, scared the shit out of me as a kid, and kind of invoked, it was one of the early films that made me love horror films. So it's Clive Barker, who created Hellraiser, Pinhead, you all, anybody who's into the genre knows that. But I've met very many people that love Hellraiser that don't know anything about Nightbreed. They don't even know that the film exists. So it was a box office flop. They didn't even make their money back on it. Absolutely just got shit on by so many people. Fox made the movie and basically forced Clive Barker in a direction he didn't want to go in. And the main direction was that the monsters are the good guys and the men, the human beings, are the bad guys. And at that time, that wasn't marketable. Slashers were really big, the Halloween movies, and the Friday the 13th movies were still big. You know, no, the studios thought it was a risky endeavor to promote the monster and love the monster. So at one point in time, this movie had the most monsters ever in a film in the Guinness Book of World Records on screen. All practical effects, just such an interesting story. And it is a slasher story tied in. There's David Cronenberg, who's also a master of horror.
Comes out with a
made
new
Scanners,
movie
made The Fly, made Videodrome. You know, so many great horror films. Plays the antagonist, Slasher, who pins his murders on Craig Schaefer, another character in the story, who basically sets out to kill the Nightbreed because they're different and he can't be a part of them. You know, it's just a really interesting story. I love it. So I decided to make some pins on it. Rag Cadavers is my company. Started 2020, March of 2020. And now I'm 12, well, I guess. With this, I would be 14 pins in. So this is a three-pin set that I just released last week. And unfortunately, it's not the most popular movie of all time. If it was, I wouldn't be trying to advocate it right now. I try to pick movies that aren't in the spotlight, you know. But yeah. Made a three-pin set, and I guess I'll go ahead and show it to you.
Just gives him the finger. Boof! Fuck you! So and I also, hate that movie.
I designed the backing card, front and back here. The front.
You
want to
show it up there?
Yeah, I'll bring it up there. The Gate of Midian on the front, and on the back it just advertises Rag Cadavers, you know. But, yeah.
Yeah, now take a look. Yeah, I actually was in the same boat of knowing Clive Barker's Hellraiser and not Nightbreed. And it wasn't until, Scream Factory actually came out with their box set, the director's box set of Nightbreed, knowing that they're going to take out the director's cut. And it actually still took me 2 years even after that, after Drew told me about that whole thing. And it... I've seen it three times since. So, and that's even him talking about it, seeing the pins, it's, I can't wait to, actually, I'm going to buy that set, and I'm going to be postering on the board here soon enough, you know?
It's a beloved cult film that has survived over the years because of cult fans, including that long sought after director's cut that came out. They had lost like nearly 45 minutes of original material, so the movie always kind of had this weird feel. It had a lot of plot holes. It didn't flow super nicely, but we still loved it. Now it makes more sense if you get to see the Scream Factory director's cut. But yeah, I still just don't think the film gets the recognition that it deserves.
And should, so. You know, I was it's up there where, you know, Clive Barker is the master. Yeah, you know, of his craft.
It's definitely my pick for the week. It made Clive Barker he made one other movie, Lord of Illusions, after that, but it basically ruined, put a bad taste in his mouth in film, in Hollywood. He's a writer, and he's a painter, and he's a recluse. So, naturally, he doesn't want to be a part of Hollywood, you know. So,
yeah.
Fuck Fox for ruining Clive Barker as a director.
Yeah. Yeah, he even gets pissed when you talk about Hellraiser. You know, he doesn't want to fucking talk. You talk to him now. We talked to him, 2 years ago at Screamfest?
Yeah.
You know, or a year ago at it'd be 3 years ago. God damn, 3 years ago. And he was all about talking about it, you know. He signed my Candyman along with Tony Todd.
Yeah.
You know, and he absolutely loved talking about, you know, that stuff again. You know, then again, he's in the later stage of his life now, and he's probably kind of, not say taking anything for granted, but he's just like, he's enjoying the moment, you know, because he might not have much time left. So, but yeah, that's our show for the day. You know, anything else? Do you want to open up that can of worms now, Shane? Shane, I'll get up at this seat. I swear to God.
No, we'll save it for a later date.
Yeah, we'll save it for when Into the Spider-Verse 2 comes out in June of next year. Fuck.
It's gonna be so good though.
Yeah, there's two parts to it too. Yeah. You know. But, you know, but next week, Sam Raimi, I'm going to watch The Quick and the Dead 7 times. I'm going to tell you that right now. I love that fucking movie. It's probably, outside of the Evil Dead series, it's my favorite Sam Raimi film. So I'm going to talk about that. We're going to preview Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Drew, I hope you're all caught up on Marvel by then.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
Just
it's all gonna make perfect sense to me for sure.
Are you gonna watch the movie and you'll be like, what the fuck is going on here?
I'm gonna at least watch the Doctor Strange movies and Spider-Man, like what I've missed, it, like directly
anything he's
that correlates in, with that character.
I can understand that. That's probably because apparently there's in the preview I heard Patrick Stewart in it.
Oh,
as Professor Xavier.
What
oh,
the
sick.
Maybe.
What
maybe.
About?
Maybe.
Oh, sick.
Maybe.
Oh my God. All
there's a citadel that he goes to in the preview, and in the background it's, I think we should tell him. And it sounds in the cadence of Professor Xavier, and it's obviously fucking Patrick Stewart. So
holy shit. All right, sold. So
you're goddamn welcome.
If there's one person out there that's watched every single episode we've ever done or whatever, anytime we get into Marvel, I always state that the only thing I really truly enjoy in Marvel is X-Men.
Yeah.
Like,
so
I love all the X-Men movies.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it next week, but the trailer is so hidden. Like, it's not like what they did with the Spider-Man trailers where they at least fucking released, you know, the villains before, you know, the obvious getting back Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire. So I am super excited to talk about whenever we talk about next week's show. And but that's next week. You know, you can visit The Average Joe Movie Show on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm starting to do it more often. I should have posted that whole Sony pictures, what have you, on Twitter. Probably get still nothing. I have no followers, I think.
I also probably dropped the ball on Ragged Cadavers, just Ragged _ Cadavers on Instagram. If you're trying to quickly locate these pins.
Yeah, if you can't.
In the link in the bio on Instagram or your very first search on Google, it'll pop up.
Yeah, or you can go to The Average Joe Movie Show as well, and we'll send you the link right over there if you can't figure it out.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm Matt Wallace. This is Andrew Brown. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Shane Scantling, don't you dare click on yourself.
Hey.
What the fuck is that? And we will see you all next week. And it's going to be May.
It's going to be May.
What?
It's going to be May.
It's going to be May.
We got them. See y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye. Have a good time. Bye.